In the second part of our startup stories in partnership with Baltic Ventures, Talk On To Walk On is once again delighted to share a conversational insight into the mindsets of impressive entrepreneurs. We have Rebecca Garcia of Cubode, who are making coding and data analysis much more accessible to small and medium-sized companies. Peter Lydon of Burl, tackling the environmental impact of the fashion industry by allowing customers with one click to trade in used clothing for credit on their favorite brand websites. And Paul Williams of Ittybit, who has created software that tackles problems such as uploading, storing, and converting video, audio, and image files at a massively reduced cost.
I care more about what I think. And if I am making decisions that fulfill me and make me happy, if I make mistakes, I learn. I'm only 30. Fundraising, it's like going to a club as a 17-year-old that has never been to a club. You know kind of like what you're looking for, but you don't know how it works. You have to go between vision and organizing the day-to-day and kind of like being an execution machine. But I do think the vision and setting up the time to share that vision with the rest of the team and other stakeholders constantly is much more important than I ever thought.
Actually, you know, you talked about skill set before. I think your moral set is probably the most important thing in terms of like you both got to agree what's right and what you're prepared to do and what you're not. So I guess my big frustration is all about people who say what they're going to do rather than talk about what they've done. There's always times we disagree, right? And I think it'd be wrong if we didn't, because we wouldn't really be that passionate about what we're doing if we just sort of let each other get on with it. The power of the team and the collective is amazing, really. You know, 10 people working together is like 100 people working apart, right?
You should hire people who are better than you, but you should also understand the job and understand the role. And yes, I think if you're not able to basically do a lot of things on your own, I think you'll really struggle. You shouldn't invest in somebody who needs the advice. Like, do you know what I mean? You're trying to find investments where, if I didn't invest, the founder would do this anyway. In terms of things that really impacted me in school, I was always entrepreneurial. I was the guy who would buy sweets at the store and sell them for a markup at lunch, right? Like that. I've always been like that.
Even if you think their business idea may not be directly relevant to you, their stories and mindset insights are definitely for everyone. You will also get to see our passion for business and why we have invested in the Baltic Ventures Tech Accelerator, and how the power of conversation and community created at Baltic Ventures has collectively provided these founders the courage and confidence to walk on towards their dreams. If you love what you hear and want to learn more about becoming an investor or applying for the next Baltic Ventures cohort, go to balticventures.uk. If you want to learn more or connect with any of the brilliant businesses featured in this series, all details are in their show notes. We're proud to be playing a small part in the journey of these fabulous founders. So let's talk on to walk on with Rebecca, Paul and Peter, and let's see where it leads.
So Paul, welcome to Talk On To Walk On. Thank you for joining us. And this is another episode in our collaboration with Baltic Ventures. And you are one of the fantastic group of founders that has come through what we call the 2023 cohort with your startup business. So this episode is really to learn more about your business, learn more particularly about you and the drivers behind being an entrepreneur. And we'll come to that because you've had some previous businesses as well. And an opportunity for you to share the fantastic work you're doing and for the listeners and the watchers of this episode to learn and hopefully follow you in your journey. So welcome.
Well, thank you very much. And I look forward to telling you a little bit more and also, yeah, getting to know you both a little bit better as well.
Ittybit we have to start with, because that's the most important thing to get out of today is for you to tell us how amazing Ittybit is and why.
Yeah, sure. Look, I've been making videos and figuring out ways to put them on the internet since I was in school, so over 20 years. And I've had, as you alluded to, a couple of previous startup businesses where we did a lot of content. We hosted really popular podcasts, including one famous Liverpool FC one. I see this shirt in the background there. And we worked with YouTubers with millions of subscribers. So we were dealing with tons of content and always trying to solve the problem of where to host it. In those businesses, that they did reasonably well and we were, you know, really happy with the outcome. But I always felt with gritted teeth whenever I see those big invoices coming in that there was an opportunity to do something better in the space for hosting media. And I know you started this kind of conversation podcast during COVID, during lockdown, and similarly, I was at home a lot. Obviously, everything became video, and yeah. I was experimenting with all the different options you could possibly name. And it got to that point of just, I actually know a lot about this space and have, I'm quite opinionated, some strong beliefs about ways this could be better, and had the resources, the time to sort of start experiments in that direction, and came together with some really great technical people to build what became Itybit. And what we do is we make really great developer tools for handling all those annoying media tasks that we had to deal with in our previous businesses. So uploading super easily, secure storage, deliver really quickly, but also convert it to the right format every time. And also make sure you can extract all the rich data out of it. It's not just dumb ones and zeros living on a server somewhere. You can figure out, we're having this conversation, what are we talking about? Are we happy during this conversation, or are we sad? Is there any explicit language? Maybe. We'll see how it goes. Like, all of these things are useful as a site host to know. We make it super easy to access it. And as you said, we just recently went through the Baltic Accelerator. We're currently raising an investment round that's going really, really well. So we're very excited about this year being able to take it out to market and to grow pretty rapidly.
Thanks for that description, Paul, because in preparing for this episode, Michelle and I were toying with, and we were doing our research, and there are all sorts of different ways to describe Itybit and what you do and so on. And you've managed to summarize it in quite a straightforward way. Somebody, I read an article or an interview that you took part in that said, is this the Stripe for media files? Which is quite an exciting prospect in terms of where Itybit as a business might go. But before we get into that and talk a little bit, we will talk more about Baltic Ventures and so on and your fundraising. But in terms of your customers, you know, who you will be selling this product to, you talk about developers. And in my mind, developers are either individuals sitting in a room that could be in Nigeria or Korea or somewhere in South America, or developers could be actually a big group of developers working for a large corporate. So where do you see Itybit sort of being sold?
Sure. We're definitely starting with the smaller teams, startup teams, people who are not too dissimilar from us and from us a few years ago. And the reason for that is because whilst we eventually want to move into enterprise sales and we can save companies millions of dollars, literally, like with some of the clever technology we've got, what we've learned quite quickly is there's a period that's the perfect time to catch developers, and it's when they're about to start a new project or they're in that research phase. Over 5 years, we'll build a brand and we'll become that Stripe that you mentioned. Like, it's already in your head, so when you need something, you're ready to go. Right now, we're competing with, well, should we build it ourselves? Or what are the options on the market? Let's start Googling or asking friends for recommendations. So it's a really logical place for us to start with either existing teams that are doing a new product line or adding a new feature to an existing product, like that kind of greenfield side, or I'm a startup, we're building something cool and new, like what tech stack do we pick? And developers in sort of startups tend to do, they like JavaScript developers, they are always changing frameworks, they're early adopters, they're happy to test newer products whilst we build that reputation. And there is that idea in startups, right, of you kind of your MVP and be scrappy and can you get things out to market quickly? That doesn't necessarily apply for infrastructure. Like, you have to be very robust. Like, we've invested a lot of time. Our team has built things at like really internet scale to make sure that if you kind of sign up to Itybit, we're going to just look after you really well. Hopefully you'll be a customer for 5-10 years. So we're starting there. Definitely part of our plan is to move up into enterprise sales as we build that reputation and come a bit further. But it's very easy for us to reach front-end smaller team developers now. So that's our plan for the next 18 months.
Yeah, the impression I get from that is you're making sure that your end user is immediately happy with the product. Have you learned a lot from your previous businesses in taking that attitude?
I'll start with, I had a business when I was at university that did really well. It was a content-based business. So we did lots of actually conversations like this. We talked to a lot of the best football coaches actually in the world. And I was happy to fly. I'd go to Amsterdam, I'd go to Milan just to have that conversation. I think that was the best way to learn. And I was off doing that. So on the content hosting side, I was able to kind of do everything. And it worked really well. It became a good business. I dropped out of university because it was doing very well, and it was ultimately acquired. So absolutely great outcome for somebody so a young age. However, in the second business, which was it was a platform working with other creators actually to help them host their media, that took me probably a year to realize that I had to delegate. I couldn't do everything myself. So I'd taken that lesson probably too far from the first business. And it took a little bit of adjustment that, one, there's much better people than me. And if you can attract them with a great story, see that they're going to make, you know, they're going to make some money and bring them in, there's, you can just go a lot further, a lot faster. And that was something that took me probably a year to adjust to kind of get that mindset right. And that informs this business massively. With Itybit, we're basically only hiring like world-class experts, and we have a relatively small team, but we can go really, really far with it. And that means hiring the best people wherever they are in the world. And I have to do a really good job at selling the vision that they buy into that and are willing to, because a lot of them can go make $200,000 every year relatively easily. So like, why come and join us for a little bit less than that? Not sadly, not too much less than that, because they buy into the vision. So yeah. That, can you bring in the best possible people? That took a little bit of time for me to probably learn over the course of those previous businesses, but I think it's probably the most important lesson.
Again, I was very early in a previous business I had many years ago. We had a CGI, computer generated imagery business. And when we very first started, we were ever so grateful for people to work for us, you know. You're just like, oh, you actually want to work for us? Oh, thank you. Here you go, we'll pay you, you know, that. Because, that lesson that you've learned, there's lots of lessons in the delegation, letting go, surrounding yourself with people who can do it better than you, you know, while you focus on the business, which is very difficult because you're in the trenches at the beginning, aren't you? And to take that leap is a huge lesson for many entrepreneurs to delegate, let go, and actually pay people very well. But it's very difficult when you're starting out and finances are tight. Did you have to do any bootstrapping, or, you know, what have financial sacrifices have you made to make that happen?
Well, I was fortunate that a previous business had an outcome that meant I was able to self-fund. So I've been able to self-fund to date, but I actually wouldn't have been able to do any of this if... So I want to go back to the point you just made, and it's really important. You should hire people who are better than you, but you should also understand the job and understand the role. And yes. I think if you're not able to basically do a lot of things on your own, to it might not be perfect, but 80% good enough, I think you'll really struggle. So being able to do, without sounding like really arrogant, it's like you've had to learn over 15 years of building my own companies, like all these different hats and how to wear them and how to do a good enough job in that space. You have to do that for the first sort of 12 months of a business, at least until you've got some sort of product. I find it really, really difficult. And I've been approached by other really smart people, successful people who want to start a startup. But if they're not technical, I very rarely see that work. There are exceptions, but it's a lot harder than if you can get something going yourself. You have to be able to do something. And it can't just be make PowerPoints or spreadsheets. Like you have to make something real that people can interact with.
Yeah.
Then I think that buys you the time in order to sort of get some feedback. You then learn what the customers want. We've changed quite rapidly from, majorly from what our original idea was. Then you know you're hiring the right people for the right jobs. Like, I think that's really important. It kind of is a balancing act, I think.
Thanks for that, Paul, because that's really inspirational to start up on real startups who are in, like I describe it, as in the trenches, having to learn and do everything yourself and making those financial sacrifices to get a business. Have you got some leverage? Is there something in this? And it's those first few years that can make or break you. But then if you've got really good at doing it yourself, you then... It's that the mindset shift is massive to then go, right, I have to let go of this to focus on the business and not be permanently in it, because you're just going to get exhausted. So that was a really inspirational, really good piece of advice. So thank you.
To go back 10 years, though, I think it's worth saying that those skills that I was learning because I had to, because I needed them for my company, I was able to go and freelance and make pretty good money consulting that bridged the gap. So currently with Itybit, I've been able to focus almost all my time on it, which has been really great. That wasn't the case when I first started. And that was a case of Definitely bootstrapping and just piecing together, doing some freelance work, and then that would buy me 10 hours per week to focus on my business. I think that if you're slightly younger and you've not got the mortgage or the kids or these like big expenses that are going to be there no matter whether you do any work or don't do any work, like those things, you maybe can buy yourself a time. So slightly different advice depending on what stage of life that you're at. I think if you can be scrappy when you're younger, you can get quite far.
And then, Paul, you talked about the last 10 years of thing. Have your own personal drivers and motivations changed and developed? You talked about the YouTube channel that you set up and you sold. You talked about dropping out of university because it was making money. What was driving you then compared to what drives you now? And what is it that you want personally out of building this? And so are you a serial entrepreneur? You want to exit and then move on to the next thing? Or, what is it?
An initial motivation was just to break out of the not working a 9-to-5. It's in terms of things that really impacted me in school, I was always entrepreneurial. I was the guy who would buy sweets at the store and sell them for a markup at lunch, right? Like that. I've always been like that. I don't know whether it's parenting or what. I think I just have this idea that actually the world is very malleable and flexible, even at a very young age. So one example would be this: my school went on a trip to Paris, France, but only if you studied French or art or history A levels. I didn't study any of those things, but I just went anyway. I just told my parents I was going on a school trip and booked it myself with EasyJet, Liverpool Airport, like about £10, because my friends were going. Like, I don't know where that comes from, because my parents were not. They were not very lax, or they weren't very strict. It was just something between. But I've always had that attitude. And so the idea of, okay, I'm going to go to university, graduate, and then, work in the city or whatever it was, that was going to be lucrative, just seemed like hell. And I just wasn't going to fit into that. So I had that from a very young age. I don't really know where it came from, if I'm honest, but I've always felt that way. So the initial motivation was, can I make enough money to honestly just to go traveling or to basically buy my own time and not be stuck in one place? Then that obviously does evolve over time. It's having had a business sell for what at the time seemed like an extraordinary amount of money. It's funny now. It's everything, all the prices have gone up and everything in retrospect. I'm like, oh yeah, that's a small pre-seed round or whatever. It's completely different. But having that early, the motivation did shift towards, can I build something more enduring? And I was fortunate enough to live in the USA in Silicon Valley. There, I was surrounded by every single person was smarter than me, worked harder than me, and just had a more interesting life. Mm. And that was pretty good, because where I grew up, it's great, middle class, fairly comfortable, but it wasn't exciting. And I got somewhere that was exciting. My motivation now is can I live the rest of my life surrounded by people who are smarter than me, who work harder than me, and who are more interesting than me? And one way to do that within a company context is, can we hire the best people? Can we make sure you're kind of offering them all the things they need to come and work with you, and then you can learn from them? That's a big thing. And having had that, a little bit of that financial security, the next thing is, can you build something that's almost 10 or 100 times bigger? Not just the ego stroke of it, but I think there's lots of companies get really good and then they sell too soon. And they don't have a lasting impact. They don't impact the area that they're based in. They don't impact the staff don't get wealthy as well. And you see in the US what's different. I was in Los Angeles when Snapchat IPO'd, and almost 1,000 new millionaires were created overnight who started to invest in new tech startups. A new angel sort of cohort was generated. And that hasn't happened in the Northwest. It's not happened in England very often. So if we want to have really the best kind of coolest startups, it's great that we have angel investors who can put in small checks and they have the tax benefits, and it's great. But it'd be completely different if we had thousands of kind of people in the 20s who are still technical, who want to go again, and they've got that financial cushion and the ambition to go and build something really lasting. I think then we need more companies like that. I'm obviously hopeful that Itybit becomes one of them. But even if there's other companies that are on that scale of ambition, and actually not happy to sell for 7 figures, I think that would really benefit the scene much more. But we have a lot of steps to go in between.
That quite a few things I wanted to unpack there. One, what you were saying about surrounding yourself by, you know, clever people and people who are going to push you is incredibly important for your own personal growth, and that's something that I think something that everybody should listen to and adhere to. And then your last point, do you, and this might be you might need to, this, I don't know if this is controversial or not, but do you think that the climate, let's say the business and the startup climate and even society in the UK is ready for that kind of environment that you outline, where there are startups that are IPOing, you know, several startups that are IPOing a year, and thousands of millionaires being created who are then going to obviously, hopefully, take that money and put it to good use elsewhere. Is that a mentality thing? Are we talking about Brits versus Americans in terms of that mindset, or do you think we can get there as a country?
You're right that it could be a spicy take, and I don't want to come in with anything overly negative, because I think there is a cohort of people, but they are the minority, who have that level of ambition. There's more in London than there is in the North. There's more in the US than there is in all of the UK. Like, there's levels to this, definitely. But the talent is clearly here. The technical talent, for even outside of software, like even for like hard tech, the universities remain world-class in the UK. And between Liverpool, Manchester, Sheffield, like there's some really, really good scientific universities, and a lot of students come from around the world to those destinations because they're top tier, world class. So that isn't the bottleneck. It is not that there's not the people for it. The mentality part of it, I think there's a long way to go. Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm all over that, Patrick, because, you know, in the States, I'm not advocating bankruptcy or failure, but it's almost seen more of a badge of honor and an achievement that you've had a go, whereas here, I think people very much fear failure, fear more what people think of them. I think it's got worse in social media, although it has its good and bad points. But also, I think, and Patrick's talked about this, because Patrick's not from the North, that we tend to have a limitation on our, we put, oh, that'll do, a will. And you talked about selling out at a particular figure. Oh, wow, that's amazing. I'll take that. That'll do. And we're not exposed. I mean, again, we're more exposed again online now or whatever, but certainly historically as a culture, we've very much that 9-to-5 culture, certainly in the North, working class culture. You do well if you became a teacher, doctor. I'm not saying you're not, that's not a good thing, but it was just, what are you going to be when you grow up?
No, I agree with that. I went to a selective grammar school, and in retrospect, they should have pushed every single student there much harder than to go into a profession. There's some really talented people there that I think their ambition shouldn't have been to make 50 or 60 or 100,000 pounds per year. And it's not about the money. It's about like how much impact can you have with the talents that you have. And I think it was exactly that, settling for that's good enough. And I don't know about you guys. Like, I've got like Irish immigrant parents. So actually, 50k a year is like spectacular for like it's right. So I think that's why I would advocate that stair step approach of, can you have like a quick win or just something that gives you that stability? Because you can fear failure if it means being back home with mum, or if you've not got family to fall back on, like you can't make your rent. That's terrifying. Like, it's, you can't make long-term decisions with that level of anxiety unless you're just like wired in a particularly high risk way, which isn't necessarily healthy. So having that, can you have a quick win outcome, but then don't do that multiple times, go bigger, go more ambitious. Like, once you've built that stability, I think that is an approach that can help in the UK. But you've got that tall poppy syndrome, like this says that the Northern, like take him down a peg thing. You are competing against that, and there's benefits to that. And it's good that my mates can just call me out and like, you know, tell me that I'm being a dick. You need that, but you can't be only that. You need to surround yourself with peers who also have that ambition and optimism as well. You have to get the balance right, I think.
It sounds like you've got a great balance and a great attitude, Paul. I love that. And I know you'll like that too, Patrick, won't you? Because it is a topic that we often talk about.
We do. And I've been up here for the last 10 years, and I've lived I must say, I haven't. I don't think I've lived or travelled as extensively as you have, Paul. I mean, you'll have to give us the list of the places you've been to. But I've lived in New York, I've lived in Paris, and I was born and brought up in Kenya. When I moved to Liverpool, and I'm speaking as on behalf of sort of Liverpudlians and Scousers, not necessarily. I can't sort of bundle this as to the northwest of England, but I really detected a can-do attitude amongst Liverpudlians in terms of. Knowing that to make it in the world, we up here in Liverpool have to punch above our weight. And all the ingredients are there amongst people. You know, people's enthusiasm and passion for, you know, for whether it's their job or whether it's the footy or, you know, it's there. And there's something, it's almost, and I don't know how long people have been saying this, it's almost as if Liverpool's on the brink of greatness, and people just need that encouragement to grasp the nettle and go for it, because I think that, you know, the attitude is all right, is there.
You know, you're talking on the brink of greatness from a business.
Yes, yeah, I'm talking in the context of what we're talking about here. No,
you need the peers, though, right? Like, I think that's a really important point. So, growing up, I was born in Warrington, so I'm halfway between the two, right? But like, growing up, and it was important to me that there were examples of people who'd grown up in like sort of South Manchester or the Northwest in general, who had gotten out, if you want to call it that, like they'd gone and done more interesting things, whether that was in music, sport, like these are things where we excel. But there was some really famous scientists from like some Manchester University, right? Like this gone like made world-class discoveries. There's authors who've gone and like Martin Amis, for example, was a guest lecturer when I was at university. It's like, these are people who've become like bigger than the place that they grow up. And I think that is important that you have that, but in different areas beyond just sport or whatever it is. And I say this as a failed footballer.
But what I love about is the legacy element. So that people should be inspired, not necessarily just to make, like you say, just to make money for themselves. But this sounds like a debate we could have for quite a long time. It's a whole podcast in itself. But if you are Northern or particularly socialist values, think of it as what you can do with it. You know, let that be the driver. Well,
the government isn't going to look after you. Like that's correct. The fact is. The more you expect to make change with voting for people, the longer you're going to be disappointed, right? We've seen for 20 years false promises. Probably people who are older than me will say for 40 years. Like, it's not going to impact things ultimately. Yeah. And you can take a very like American libertarian approach to I'm going to impact my own life, but actually, like, we live in a society, like the reason that we are a lot better, I think, in Europe than some of the circumstances in the US is because we do have. You can call them socialist values, but it's like there's an idea that we have a community that matters, not just an individual. The way to level that up generally is to probably make some money yourself and then give back, because you can't rely on somebody else to give you any. It's just not going to work. So as soon as you have that like idea that, okay, if I want to affect the world, I have to do it myself. Yeah, you can be selfish about it, but actually I'd rather live somewhere where all my friends are well off and then we can hang out. Right? Like it just, the town should level up, the city should level up, the region should level up, the country should level up. And that is more important than, oh, well, I've got mine, screw everybody else. I'm sure you know people who are a bit like that and none of them are happy.
Without going off track too much, there's a group that I only came across quite recently called, in the UK, called Patriotic Millionaires. And they're really a bunch of entrepreneurs who've made their money and continue to make their money and build businesses, but their ambition is to give back. And it's worth, if you haven't come across them, it's worth looking into.
I just made a note. But
as you say, it's not the making money bit; it's what you do with it and give it back.
Not having any is a constraint, isn't it? Like you have to solve that constraint first. You can't do anything if you're broke. So it's like, don't be broke is like rule number one. Then lots of options are available to you. But if you don't have that first stability, if you don't have stability first, you're very limited in what you can do. You probably can't do anything else really, except focus on paying rent.
And I think it's an incredible motivator, because there obviously are days, as we, you know, when entrepreneur, you know, you're in business and, you know, things are tough and, you know, decisions are coming out your ears and problems can be, you know, there are great days, there are bad days, more probably some more bad than good. And you need that motivator. You need to come back to your why. Why am I doing this? And everyone will have a different why. But if your why is based in the potential to give back to your community or inspire the next generation, for me personally, that's my personal motivator, why we keep going, why we give back, why we do our podcast, or why we coach and mentor. But just coming back now, just bringing it back to Baltic Ventures. So you were somebody who potentially, listening to you now and talking to you now, I'm not saying you didn't need Baltic Ventures, but you were definitely somebody who was incredibly, at the time, you'd had a lot of experience in business. What drew you to Baltic Ventures?
The cohort effect. Absolutely, being surrounded by founders, and the quality of the founders was very high, fortunately, after I got in and met them all. I was very, very impressed. And that's great, because that's exactly what I went looking for. As you say, this is maybe another spicy opinion. I almost think like you shouldn't invest in somebody who needs the advice. Like, it's almost like you know what I mean? You're trying to find investments where if I didn't invest, the founder would do this anyway. I feel like that's your sweet spot. And you just, like, you're lucky enough that they allow you to kind of be involved in some capacity. And I think with Baltic, like, that they're very much sort of tick that box. I think all the founders are very capable. And for me, that's what I was looking for. So, as you alluded to, I lived outside of the UK for the best part of the last 10 years until COVID, and I moved back, spent 3 months in my parents' attic, like literally the last flight from Singapore back to the UK, and then I had nowhere to live and it was like lockdown. So I was like, okay, cool. That's quite isolating. And I've got lots of very impressive, fun, like peers who I talk to on the internet. But there's something different about in real life that I didn't really have being back in the UK. And I'm staying back in the UK close to family because of various family illnesses. And I also have a young son now. So, like, we're not going to be jumping back off to Tokyo anytime soon. So it's like, okay, can I build that community of in real life people around here? Baltic seemed like a great opportunity to do that. And thankfully, it's paid off. It really was a great group of people. So the investment money, yeah, super helpful. Like, it's incidental though, you're right. Like, we could absolutely raise money like when we need to. It was more, can we get a group of people who just understand the founder journey? And some great people that I employ, but you can't always be 100% honest with how things are going. Whereas with founders, they get it and it's just different. So finding the best of the best in the region, like, seemed like a no-brainer if I could get into that. And thankfully we did.
Yeah, you're right. That was a key part of certainly our criteria. The people sitting around the table when you came into pitch was, would they just do it anyway? You know, what are they at that real capable stage? And there was quite a few businesses we sadly had to turn down. And I'm glad now they've brought on this launch pad, which is evolved out of Baltic Ventures, which is great, out of the first cohort. But it was definitely a key criteria, wasn't it, Patrick?
No, absolutely. We talk about, also, you know, you're as much investing in the person, or the founder or the co-founders that are in front of you that you're getting to know, as much as the product itself. And the other term that's bandied around is ecosystem. And the way you describe it, Paul, it really was an ecosystem. And I'm sure, and I assume that you'll stay in touch with some or all of the founders as you go forwards, and you can still swap stories and exchange advice as the months and the years go on.
We have a regular catch-up call from tomorrow, actually. So we'll hear how everyone's going after every few weeks, I think. Yeah, it's really helpful. I can't overstate how useful it is just to have that honest sort of back channel.
You know, and I think, you know, the key to the backbone of our talk on brand literally is the power of conversation. And it sounds really obvious when you say it, but sometimes we just don't do it enough. And the power of actually, like you say, connection, communication, and then it leads to potential collaboration, and even just being able to, like you say, download to somebody who gets it, the impact on you personally, not just from your business perspective, but from you personally, and you know how it impacts on your energy and all those, the ripple effect is huge, isn't it? If you've just been able to tell somebody how you feel and somebody just validates that, something so simple as that, even if they don't give you the solution to whatever the problem is, if you feel understood and heard, it's massive, isn't it? Particularly when you're running your business.
Tell me if you agree on this point, but I have a sense that oftentimes you don't even really know what you think until you like try and describe it to somebody else. Yeah. You have the brain has like a sort of 60% fuzzy version of kind of what it's thinking. And very often either you try and form a coherent sentence and it just doesn't happen because actually you've not thought about it deeply enough. You don't have all the answers. And so having just that sounding board, it helps you to crystallize what do I actually think? And sometimes you even hear yourself saying something out loud, realizing like that just doesn't work. It doesn't make sense. Whereas you could have been mulling it over internally for a week and thinking like, oh, there must be some way to crack this. And sometimes it doesn't even have to be an expert. It can just be, like you said, a friend, a colleague, a peer who having to describe it to them in their language, you crystallize your own thoughts. And sometimes you make the decision before you've even gotten their feedback. You just ask the question. You're like, actually, now I know what I think.
Just to take, Patrick, sorry, I know I'm carrying on here with Paul, but I was going to go, you mentioned the word switch off, and I wrote Game of Thrones next when he sent us his bio. Can we just, we need to admit, and Patrick, I'll leave you to lead on this, we've never seen it.
Well, yeah. And I know the Games of Thrones has a lot of nudity in it, doesn't it? Which isn't a reason why I have or haven't watched it. But you're right, Michelle. We haven't watched Game of Thrones.
Were you nude?
No, I think there's a completely different casting process for the nude actors. So no, I was fortunate to be an extra in season 7, and that was, I think everyone will agree, when it went downhill. And the only really job that I've had since university was a contract with HBO to not shave or cut my hair for a year. And we did a few little scenes.
Brilliant. I love it. I love it. And then I guess just coming full circle back to your uni, you know, it sounds like your whole mindset, and it's interesting. I reckon if you dug deep, you'd find where that mindset's come from. I don't know where it is, but whether you've heard somebody talk or you've seen someone on the television, you know, there's somebody somewhere that's ingrained something within you to go big, go home or go home. I think that's a really incredible characteristic that's going to guarantee success. I know you can't say that, you know, I mean, what is success? That's a whole different question. But what does that look like to you? When do you think you would be potentially satisfied as being successful?
I know I will succeed, and that anyone listening to this knows like that. It's like, oh, what an arrogant asshole this guy sounds like. Because what I mean by success is like if I can keep going, like don't quit, then you win. I think you see a lot of businesses that sometimes, right, you go above your skis, like you get too big a salary bill, or you've rented an office and you're committed for 3 years. Like there's certain things that can just kill your business, but a lot of businesses like die by suicide, not from competition. So like, just don't do that. Don't quit. Keep going. And then the success almost like comes inevitably at that point, because if my success is I have to make $1 billion, we have to have 10,000 employees. Like we have to, you know what I mean? There's lots of things that are like extrinsic, that it's all about the process. Like if we just do the process, typically good things will come from it. And there's actually not that much external impact. Like external factors can impact it if you keep on just following your own playbook and executing sort of day after day after day. So yeah. I kind of will succeed by my own definition.
And I'm sure Patrick agrees, already think that you have, you know, there's a success story already you're telling, you know, you're sharing it today. But everybody has their different parameters of what that looks like. Has your attitude changed at all? You told us you have a son. Is he your only son? He's quite young. Has that changed you at all since he's been born?
Yeah, massively. I feel more urgency. I feel more urgency. Okay. I think that obviously you want him to have the best possible upbringing. with some caveats of not being too spoiled. And I think there's mm-hmm. benefits to having a little bit of toughness kind of involved, but yeah. you want to give him the best possible opportunity. And you realize how fast time passes. He's 18 months old, and that has absolutely flown by. And it probably felt like, oh, it's going to be a long time before he's at nursery. And then the next milestone of he's in school. But actually, like, we're already halfway through that point. And once he's in school, like, the amount of time we get to spend with him, like, drops off quite massively. So there's that urgency aspect of it is something I didn't expect. It seems very logical now. There's loads of things about parenting that my friends have all got multiple kids told me about it. I just didn't listen. You have to learn it through experience, I think. I think the sense of moving faster and just you don't have forever, that is probably been amplified the most.
Yeah, and time does, I mean, move. When you're looking back, you know, when your kids were younger and so on, you do wish you could, you know, revisit those times and so on, because they did move so quickly. What I think what you're saying is that if you're more mindful of the passage of time and do things and live your life in a more purposeful way, then you can take more out of it. So it's not necessarily, I mean, you use the word urgent. When people think the word urgent, they think of being in a hurry. And I take it, I think you're not saying that. You're just saying that, you know, you're driven by more purpose, because you have this perspective of your son now, who's in the world, and time moving quite quickly.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. So will this be video podcast? I'm like, so around my neck, I have a little thing here. This is Memento Mori. It's from Thailand. It's a Buddhist monk who has passed away, and it's a reminder constantly. I'm a real techno-optimist. I feel like it's quite likely I could live to 120, 150, maybe more. I think that the rate of change is great, but I'm not going to live to 1,000. Like, you know what I mean? There's some limit. And in the scale of how long the world has been around, it's basically zero. Like, it rounds to zero. So, you can get anxious about time. You can't be too focused entirely on that aspect of it. But I think the urgency is exactly as you described, Patrick. I think that you've put it very eloquently, that there's a finite amount of it. And so every time that you're doing something, there's an opportunity cost where you won't be able to re-spend that hour later on. So are you making the best use of it now? And to go back to the retirement point, like, I think trying to instill some novelty, whether it's the Game of Thrones, wrestling, whatever it happens to be, like, just doing something that's not just work, but isn't just also like relaxing and chilling out. That is how I try and keep balance. So every, ideally, year, having a son's quite novel, so we didn't do anything last year, but every year, something that's just unique, something that's memorable, something you can talk about with friends forever.
I was about to say, you're making memories, aren't you? Not within this building of your business, you know, and it'll timeline it in a way as well, because it'll make you go, well, when I was doing that, I was at this point in my business. You will remember that, because that will have been on your mind when you were doing the exciting thing. It's I love that, Paul. I could talk to you all day. I think this has just been absolutely brilliant, Patrick.
And because I know that's true, Michelle, that Michelle could talk to you all day, I'm going to actually try to pull this full circle, just to say, and before we wrap up, which we'll be wrapping up in a few minutes' time, but just back to itty bit. So tell us about the next few months and what's next. Yeah. What can we, as investors as well as observers, what can we be watching out for in the next period of time?
We're pretty focused on closing our funding round at the moment. We're having some really, really productive conversations with, like, some pretty impressive firms. So we're technically oversubscribed in terms of the round that we're raising, but we're being quite picky. We're going to make sure we talk to all of the firms we'd love to work with and see if we can get as many possible options there. So that's good. But I'm quite ready to have that out of the way, start focusing on the growing the business more intensely, to be completely honest. I think the exciting part of it is switching from 3 or 4 investor calls per day to 3 or 4 customer calls per day. And we've got a really, really, like, great product, something I'm very proud of. And the team has put something really great together, and getting that out to more people now, it helps us grow the business, but I think it also unlocks lots of new exciting products that just either aren't being built yet, or they're being built in a sort of less efficient way. So that is what I'm really excited about, is to make quite an impact in the, like we said right at the start, the kind of early stage sort of developer community, see what they build, because they're more creative than I am. We're just giving them a set of really cool tools to go and build whatever they want to build, but faster and quicker. So yeah, I'm excited about that part of it. And we are pretty ambitious. We intend to be a fairly well-known brand. To touch on Stripe, Stripe with like $1 trillion. So it's like, oh, it's the most valuable private company probably in the world. Yeah, maybe OpenAI is, they're in competition with OpenAI for the most valuable private company. So that is a huge level of ambition. But what I mean by Stripe is they're just the default, the go-to choice. I have a lot of friends of mine, we've built businesses, in fact, where we actually didn't even look if Stripe has competitors. We just, they've got such a good reputation. They're so easy to use. They're so helpful that there's almost no reason to go elsewhere. And what we would like to build and what we intend to build is the equivalent for all of the media hosting problems that developers face. So basically be so good, it doesn't even matter that there's competition. Just people just default. I have a new project. Cool, right? Like I've got my server, I've got my 80-bit subscription, I've got my Stripe subscription. Off we go.
That is exciting, and a great place to be with that sort of roadmap in your brain, in your mind, as to where it's going and how achievable that is. Michelle, do we want to leap into? We have these quickfire questions, which we're asking the same three questions to all of our guests, and one of those questions is Dragon's Den or The Apprentice,
or neither.
Neither.
I knew he was going to say that.
Did you? Oh, I'm too contrarian. I'm like predictably contrarian.
Only based on what I've just
neither of them are realistic. Like they're both entertaining, but they're not educational.
And what was the other one? The inspirational lead, somebody who inspires you.
He's a controversial figure, but Elon Musk is probably the most interesting person on Earth, right? Like you have to overlook all of his flaws, like as a person. All of his success is because he's just an extreme personality and all of his flaws come from that. But you don't want everyone in society to be an Elon, but you don't want no one to be an Elon either. Like you need some people like that. So yeah, he goes all in with his own money. Like he's happy to live on the floor of a trailer and be broke because it's more important that he's doing it. And the businesses he's built, yeah, he's become the world's richest person or alternating with a few other individuals to be the richest person. And that, I feel like he doesn't really care that much about that. Mm-hmm. Like all of the things he's building are from a broader vision. And that vision is like a 100 or 1,000 year long vision. It's much longer than the next quarter for shareholders. More business leaders who had that mindset would lead to a better outcome.
Paul, is there anything that you want to add or, you know, before we close, you know, in terms of a particular, if you had a young entrepreneur sitting in front of you right now, and I'm going to say young because you were there, you've been there, seen it, done it from a young age. But I think the fact that you started young is quite unique. You know, there's a naivety with that. There's an excitement about it. There's, you know, you come at things with fresh eyes. But so let's put it this way. If you were going to talk to yourself again at like 15, 16, 17, whenever it was you started, what would you say to yourself in terms of the biggest lesson?
16-year-old me wouldn't have listened. And I think that's a good thing. I think that the Dunning-Kruger effect is real. And as you said, the naivety is beneficial. I think if you know how tough things can be, you won't start. So I'm not sure I would give, well, I could give whatever advice. I know for a fact that teenage me wouldn't have listened anyway. So it doesn't really matter. But I almost wouldn't give any advice. I'd be like, I think it's important that you figure things out on your own. The only thing I would look for, not talking to myself, but if you're a young entrepreneur who wants to build a business, whether that's in tech or otherwise, the idea that you can do it if you just don't quit. Like there's loads of things that you'll fail at, but don't get yourself in a position where one failure kills the business. If you can give yourself that space to fail a few different times, you can figure things out. And in fact, if you're going to succeed, you have to be able to figure things out. So if you're of that personality type where you just know you can figure things out, and it's never been easier, by the way, like I believe in just-in-time learning. So I wouldn't have listened to advice from like somebody 20 years older than me anyway, because I didn't need it then. I just try and figure things out when I need them. If you've got that attitude, you're basically guaranteed to succeed. Just don't make any big decision that can kill the company. Almost nothing's like that. Almost everything is a small bet. And you know what? If it doesn't work out this week, you can just try something else next week. If you can maintain that for about 5 years, you basically going to succeed. So that's the way I think about it.
That's a brilliant note to end on. Do you think, Patrick, you're happy with that?
Absolutely. So thank you for that. And thank you for coming on our podcast.
Best of luck with it all. We have absolutely no doubt that you're definitely up there with the ones to watch in terms of that cohort. You're all ones to watch, but I think you're up there, Paul, I have to say. I'm sticking my neck out on this one.
Thank you very much.
No pressure.
I don't mind pressure.
Thanks.
Thank you very much, guys. Appreciate it.